Hello, this is Jim McKeith, and welcome back to the podcast at Delphi.org. Now, I'm saying welcome back, even though this may be the first time you've heard this podcast, because I'm actually rebooting this podcast that I started years ago as the first time here, first episode now, as an employee of Embarcadero Technologies. I actually started working for Embarcadero back in 2013, and at the time I fully intended to restart the podcast, get it going again, but just got so wrapped up in all the product releases, projects, travel, etc., that it fell by the wayside. So now, started 2015, I thought this is a great time, New Year's, to get going with the podcast again. Now, I've got a lot of changes planned, and I'm not sure about the frequency and format of the podcast, but I do know it's something I'm going to be doing going forward, so you can definitely expect more episodes in the near future. But I figure it's better to have a rolling start. So I'm going to start with an episode here and then maybe mix things up as we get going. So this first episode is an interview I recorded with Serena DuPont back in August of 2013. So right after I started with Embarcadero. This was right before the release of XE5, which added Android support to Delphi and RadStudio. So some of the content's a little dated in that regard. For example, we shipped XE5, XE6, XE7 since then. But the main focus of the podcast is just getting to know Serena, who's one of the product managers here in Embarcadero. So in that regard, it definitely still is relevant and still serves that purpose. Thanks for joining me, Serena.
Thank you very much for having me.
Your role is you are the Delphi product manager, is that right?
I'm the RadStudio product manager.
RadStudio product manager.
Yes.
Okay. It's interesting for me, as a Delphi developer, I think about everything as Delphi, but realize that there are different levels and different versions and, you know, RadStudio versus Delphi and stuff, so.
Yeah, we all, you know, we have several product managers that make up the PM team here at Embarcadero, and we all work on different areas of the product, but we also work on a lot of areas of the product together. Mm-hmm. So while we all have different responsibilities on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot of convergence, a lot of projects that we work together on as well.
That's one thing I found coming into Embarcadero is how much there are, for everything that's going on, there's usually a few people that are working on it together, collaborating to get decisions and get things done. So I thought that's a good thing.
Yes, it's definitely a very collaborative environment. That's something that I really enjoy a lot. I like interacting with people. I like interacting with my coworkers. And it's great. You can walk over to any of the engineers' desks and just bounce some ideas off their head and ask them, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And next thing you know, you're getting into discussion with several people and it ends up making the product better. So that's definitely something that I think is really great here. It's a very collaborative environment. People are very helpful. We all have the same goal. We want to ship a great product. So it's very important that you're open-minded, that you're, you know, willing to talk to people about different ideas and have these types of collaborative sessions.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with David I about taking this position. I was a little concerned about being remote because I wouldn't be here to have FaceTime with everybody. And he said, well, you come down once a week and we've already got a lot of people distributed anyway. And so it hasn't been too painful, although I've really appreciated being here this week to visit with everybody.
Yeah, we definitely have people, you know, working in offices all over the world. And I think that, you know, with today's technology, whether that's Skype or GoToMeeting or any of these other technologies that are out there, you don't really realize that people are far away. They're right there. Yep. I mean, you're talking to people on Skype that might be living in the same town as you or might be in the office where someone might be working from home. Someone might be in the office in the same town and then someone might be 5 or 10,000 miles away. But we're still all communicating via the same medium. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was in a meeting today and somebody that was in the meeting, they were actually remote and they called in, but they were still in the office here. And so it was interesting that I was like, wait a second, aren't they right over there? Did I walk past them on the way in?
I know it's kind of funny, you know, when you're in meetings sometimes and you look at all the people that are in the meeting because you can see the list of the names. And a lot of times the people are actually in the office, but maybe they're multitasking and they're working on other projects. And so they might be calling into the same meeting that someone from another country is calling into. So I think that at the end of the day, with today's technology and everything that's available to us, it doesn't really matter whether you're sitting here in, you know, your cubicle or your office or you're 5,000 miles away or 600 miles away or 800 miles away. It doesn't really matter. You're still tuned in. Everybody's always, you know, on their phone, checking their email, on their tablet, checking their email. So I think everybody's so connected nowadays that it doesn't really matter where you're physically located.
Yeah, I got my Embarcadero phone all set up today. So I got an Embarcadero phone number that forwards to my cell phone.
Very nice.
And I can get faxes via email. And yeah, it's great. So tell me a little bit about your background and what brings you here to Embarcadero.
Well, as you know, my name is Serena DuPont. I've been here over 2 years now. I started in June, 2 years and a couple months ago, in product management. I've also done product marketing in the past. But prior to coming to Embarcadero, I worked at a company called Smith Microsoftware as a product manager for their graphics solutions. And you may be familiar with Smith Micro. They do a lot in the wireless space. So they're known for building software applications for Verizon, for example. And they've done a lot in the wireless space with creating wireless hotspots, etc. So they're really in tune with what's going on in the wireless space. And that's their business on one side of the spectrum. And they also have another business, and that's their graphics software. You might be familiar with some of the applications that are part of Smith Micro that I worked on. One was called Manga Studio, and it's
I haven't used it, but I've seen it.
A drawing application, yes, and an Anime Studio, which was a 2D animation program. I managed both of those products. I also managed a product called Pixelmator. So if you're a Mac user and you've used it, it's an alternative to Photoshop. It's a very popular Mac program.
Oh, I've used that one, actually. Yeah.
And yeah. ArtRage. So I managed a spectrum of different 2D animation, graphic design, and also 3D tools as well. One of the products at the company I worked at previously was also called Poser. So you might be familiar with that.
That's a really popular one, actually.
Yes, and you see a lot of Today, you see a lot of animations on TV, whether they're crime scene investigation animations or weather animations that are actually done in that software in the news, or there's all these different TV shows nowadays that actually use the product. And as part of that, I worked on everything from roadmap to coming up with the feature specifications, working with beta testers, working with the development team, very similar to what I'm doing today. And it was really exciting for me when I joined Embarcadero because the products here are what enable developers to build software products. So mm-hmm. before, I worked with developers who used development tools to build, you know, consumer software, also professional artist software, but they're really more end user products.
Right.
Where here we're building the tools that enable developers to build these types of applications. So that is something that I found really exciting to be a, kind of on the other end of the spectrum.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like coming full circle when you think about it. So I really like that. And, you know, working here has been great, you know, with the introduction of FireMonkey and now taking a platform to all these different, a development platform framework to all these different operating systems has been really exciting. You know, working with graphic software in the past, the products I've worked on were available on both Windows and Mac. And so that was somewhat of a rarity and also somewhat common, but it's also something I've seen is that it was very difficult for people, and there was a lot of additional time spent. It was difficult to maintain two apps. You know, a lot of times developers would try to separate some of the application logic from the UI, et cetera, and use some of those best practices. But there was still a lot of kind of additional work that they would have to do to get the apps out for the different platforms. And then, you know, you're talking about another app, like an extension of your desktop app, maybe a mobile app, and now you have another tool to use. And that's really what a lot of developers are facing today. And that's something I found really exciting coming to Embarcadero, was that here's one tool that does it all, mm-hmm. all from one code base. And it's really amazing when you think of it, that it's one product and you can write your application once and you can run it on all these different platforms, whether that's desktop form factors or mobile form factors, like a phone form factor or a tablet form factor. And I think one thing that we've seen nowadays is the apps that you've, you know, come familiar to and have been using on your desktop machines, you want to be able to take them on the road. You know, whether that's your word processing apps or that's your drawing apps or that's your game apps or your finance apps, any type of app that you've been using on the desktop, you want to be able to go sit at a coffee shop and use that app. And I think it's that kind of demand that has also spurred a lot of excitement amongst developers to take their existing apps to mobile, but it's also presented this hurdle in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of additional time that it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really exciting being here and seeing what we can do to help developers get to more platforms faster.
It was exciting. There was a video we talked about this morning about the guy that made the iPhone app for the security system.
Yes.
Digiford, I think it was. And the idea that you could use the camera on your iPhone as part of this network of cameras for this digital security system. And it was neat to see and realize that this was something he developed in Delphi, and XE4 came out and he was able to make this iPhone app that integrated beautifully and worked great. And it was just, it was really exciting to see that, I thought.
Yeah, that was, I was all giggling in my office when I saw it because I was so excited. It's really a special moment when you work on a product. And this is something that I really love about product management. You're able to be involved in something that other people use to build great software, to build things. Mm-hmm. And whether that's building, animations or art, or it's building other software applications, at the end of the day, you're enabling users to be able to build things for the masses, for individuals, etc. And it's really exciting in product management because you can influence that. You can influence the features that go into the product. You can influence the future of the product. And that's something that's really exciting. Seeing that video of the app that was created, the security app, and seeing the desktop version and the mobile version got me really excited because, you know, before iOS was released, our Delphi for iOS support, we, of course, were very busy working on it. And it's a very exciting time to see it come to life. And now seeing our customers building apps for it, it's a very exciting moment. It's a very gratifying moment.
Yep. And he talked about that the Android would support, he was planning on having Android support too. And I was like, yep, that's exciting. Yes, it's going to be here.
Yeah, that's all. That's very exciting.
Yeah. What sort of things do you use as indicators to help you in your decisions about as far as how to move the product forward?
A variety of things. I mean, when you're talking about features, for example, for the product, you're looking at different sources, whether that's surveys, whether that is presentations you're doing to customers, customer meetings, overall functionality. So if you're looking at, for example, iOS or Android, or even on the desktop, you're looking at what are some of the key features that people are using, key APIs people want to be able to access, etc. And that is definitely something we do a range of different research before we implement something, of course, and before we decide what goes into a release and what we have planned for a future release, etc.
Yeah. So what are your big dreams for Rad Studio?
Well, my big dream for, the closer future is, of course, to be able to expand it to additional mobile platforms. And, today we have it for iOS. In the future, we will be having it for Android. And then beyond, of course, reaching more platforms. And so we'll have to see what the other platforms are that really come out as the strong platforms besides iOS and Android. But that's really where I see it going, is to more devices and being able to have the same apps run across many different platforms, many different devices.
When I was talking with Marco, I asked how the move with FireMonkey to mobile was different than Qlix for Kylix. And he pointed out the fact that with Qlix on Linux, the idea was it was based on speculation that Linux desktop was going to get big. But the reality is we see iOS and Android being huge today, and that's why it makes sense to have FireMonkey, and we know that it's going to be a hit, I guess.
You know, if you're looking at today's market, people are more and more building applications for mobile first. I mean, I've read so many different reports from different sources about this whole mobile first phenomenon, where people are building apps for the mobile form factors first, whether that be tablets or phones, and then they're moving to desktop, which is quite a shift from a couple years ago, where people were looking at the desktop apps and considering, should I build an extension of my app for iOS? Should I build an extension of my app for Android? Where now you're seeing people coming out with just the mobile apps first. And then, if they do really well or if that's what people want to use, then they may build the desktop app. And I think you've seen that a lot with different types of apps, whether those are journaling apps, note-taking apps, or some really popular ones nowadays that people use on their mobile devices. They can also use, whether that's the native version or maybe there's a web version. There's lots of different extensions that people are building onto their mobile apps. But really, mobile is what people have in their hands, in their pocket, in their purse every single day. They have a mobile device. And so I think that's really exciting to see that now this whole mobile-first approach is something that's getting really big, and that's what's really exciting with FireMonkey is you can build your app from that same code base and you can move to the different targets, whether you're starting with a desktop form and you're moving to mobile, or you're starting with mobile and you're moving to desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. Well, Angry Birds is a good example of that, right?
Yes, and now they have the web version, and, Angry Birds is one of my favorite games on the iPad especially. I've tried playing it on the iPhone, when I was on the plane, etc., but it's definitely easier to play that on the iPad.
On the iPad, huh?
Yeah, the bigger form factor. I don't have to zoom in as much. It doesn't hurt as much my eyes, But, who would have ever thought that shooting birds at stuff, would have been the next big, this huge hit, and people love it. And that's just, with mobile, this is so exciting because you can get your apps out in front of so many people so quickly. You know, that's something in my the previous products I worked on, they were retail products. And so they were in stores like the Target stores, Fry's, Apple stores, etc. But there was only a very limited number of products that were on those shelves. And they were really popular products. So that's why they had staying power. That's why those products were in those stores. But with the mobile marketplace and the mobile app stores, now it's easier for everybody to get that product out there. You know, if you are searching for a certain type of product, you can be seen in the app store. And then there's also competition in the app store. Just as easily as you can be seen, your app can also get uninstalled. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, mobile developers have to think about when they're building the app. And recently, a couple of weeks ago, I did a webinar on mobile UI and why it's important to build user interfaces with the types of experiences that users expect, because you have a much higher chance of success with people and having people actually stick with your application if they have the same kind of workflows that they're familiar with already.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about uninstalling. I just last week bought an app, and as I bought it, I realized I bought the wrong one. I was like, oh, this wasn't the version I wanted. And it was installing, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, it wasn't that much money. And right after I finished installing, there was a button that appeared that said refund on my Android device. And I was like, really? And clicked it. Sure enough, I got a refund. So I'm not sure how long they give you to get a refund, but that goes back to what you talked about, is making sure you have that good first impression, because not only can they uninstall your app, but potentially, apparently, they can get a refund for a short period of time.
Yeah, I don't know if that exists on the... I don't think that exists on the Apple Store.
I think that's an Android marketplace specific. Yeah, it's Android.
Feature.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely an important point. It's about building user experience people are familiar with, and also building functionality in the app that makes people want to come back to your application, right? And whether that is starting out with something simple and then expanding it, building on features based on what your customers are looking for, just like people do today for desktop apps. It's a very similar approach for mobile. But it's also about not cramming too much functionality into a small form factor. And I think that's really important. You know, when you're building an application, it's really easy to think about all the different things you want to put into it. But you also have to think about the form factor. If you have an iPhone version, you can have, you know, less functionality than you have in your iPad version. Where you're working with more screens, you don't want to clutter up the UI to make it difficult for people to navigate your application.
Right. And you don't want to bury stuff too deep either, or require them to go through five or six screens to get there.
No. And that's, you know, one of the things I covered during my webinar was talking about these new types of tutorials that you now see in applications. Actually quite popular. But when I've read statistics on them, it also says that you should keep them to like a couple of screens, one, two screens, or maybe do a transparent overlay. And it's really about not making the user jump through hoops to use your app. Your mobile app's supposed to be intuitive. Mm-hmm. Intuitive is really the key word here. It's not supposed to take an instructional guide to know how to use it.
Yeah. A few times I've gotten those tutorials, the transparent overlays, and it's like, I think I know how to use this, and I dismiss it and get rid of it. And then after using it for a little bit, I'm like, well, how do I do, you know, whatever? There's something else that's not obvious after I got past the obvious stuff. And so then I got to go back and find it and stuff. So it's definitely a balance between making it intuitive and educating your users and stuff like that. It's important.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, I think it also depends on the type of app. You know, if you're building an application that's an extension for maybe a heart rate monitor, for example, maybe there's specific instructions you want to give the user. But if you're building an app where the user is writing down their daily journals, it probably should be pretty self-explanatory on how to use the application.
Yeah. It's interesting how mobile devices, you talked about mobile first, but it's interesting how mobile devices are inspiring to new things, new types of activities. Like, you know, we talked about Angry Birds, the idea that you can touch and drag the bird back to get the distance. Because I tried the desktop version and I don't know, it wasn't the same for me. You know, with the mouse, I like the interactivity with the touch for Angry Birds really well. But there's a number of other apps that work on mobile that they don't translate the same to desktop. And that's the way it should be, especially when you're going the other direction. You shouldn't take the exact same app and try to put it on mobile, because it needs to be different, because it's a different kind of device.
Yeah, I would totally agree there. I think today, you know, using your finger on your tablet is really what people are used to, right? And it's all the different gestures that you have access to. And actually, the gestures become second nature. Now, whether I'm using a gesture on my tablet or I'm using it on my MacBook, I'm actually doing the same kind of gestures. You know, pinch and zoom, two-finger swipe, one-finger swipe, etc. People have that familiarity, and they're looking for those types of experiences in your applications. And so that's definitely something to also keep in mind when you're building your app, is building those types of experiences in. So if you have an application where the user can store their images or access photos, you should build in pinch and zoom support, because people are going to expect that it's there. And if it's not there, they're going to wonder what's up, you know, what's going on with the application, because that's really what people have become accustomed to. So there are certain types of behaviors that people seek out in all their apps and expect in their apps. And it's important to build those in to have, again, a higher chance of people using your app continuously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. It's a new vocabulary, really, of how we use our apps. We think pinch and zoom is, you know, one of those things that everybody knows what that is now, but before it would have, you know, there's no translation of that to the desktop.
No, and you know, nowadays you see little children. I mean, sometimes I'm just amazed. You see like a little 2-year-old child holding an iPad and moving his finger across and playing games, and it's just so intuitive that it's going to be really interesting when the kids that grew up on these mobile devices with those interactive experience move over to the desktop,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to be so used to this, you know, touch experience. And that's why you see a lot more touch screens now today, even on the desktop. People seek that experience. You know, they seek to be able to use their fingers to interact with objects on the screen.
I was doing some, I think it was Android development a while back, and was working on the Android device, and then went up to the desktop and actually reached up to my screen and started trying to touch it. And I was like, oh, wait, no, I got to use the mouse.
Yeah, that has happened to me before, too. I think it's, you know, it's this whole muscle memory, too. You know, it's, mm-hmm. we're so used to that. It's funny because in my husband's car, we have a certain stereo system that you can, you know, when you're driving with your right hand, you can adjust and go through the channels. Well, the other car doesn't have that.
Oh.
So I'll be in the other car and I'll move my right hand and there's nothing there. And that happens sometimes. And you think, well, why am I thinking that? But you're so used to these behaviors, right? They're kind of ingrained in you.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think on mobile, people are so, they're so used to these different behaviors now, whether that's on iOS or Android or other mobile mobile devices, that it's important to build that functionality into your application.
Yeah, I just got Elite Motion this last week and started playing with that, and it's definitely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the apps I was using it with aren't, I don't think, fully utilizing what the potential is.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminded me of the first time using a mouse and seeing people use a mouse for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that this looks like it's the next step. You know, we could see that, you know, it could very easily be put into your keyboard,
mm-hmm.
right? The size of that. And then, you know, you could be typing on the keyboard or gesturing to your computer or touching, you know, reaching out to grab things. And this more taking that touch experience to the desktop when it makes sense.
I think that's really exciting too. You know, different devices like the Kinect, for example, it's something I'm looking at buying for my house because I want to be able to play some of those interactive sports games at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting to be able to use your, you know, your arms and your hands and your legs, et cetera, to do whether that's a kickboxing or tennis or ping pong. It's kind of exciting. Granted, I think, you know, when the weather is nice, I want to be outside doing those things. But there's certainly a lot of different times where you're inside and you want to be able to still have that similar experience. And it's really exciting to see what technology has done in that space.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, actually, the Wii, I heard about a lot of retirement centers are putting it in.
Yes, I've heard that too.
And the people that are, you know, have been very sedentary just because there's not a lot going on for them and they don't want to go outside, they're getting up and playing these games.
And I think they're having a lot of fun. I mean, it's, you know, those games are not just for kids. I mean, it's really, they're group activities. It's what brings people together, right? And then that's a nice thing about technology, bringing people together. It's important, you know, nowadays we're so much on our mobile devices, right? Whether that's on social media, et cetera. But we also want to interact with people on a personal level by getting together, et cetera. And I think, like you said, with the Wii, it's a good example that a lot of the retirement homes are using it now because it brings the people together, gives them something fun to do, and it's low impact a lot of times too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. The social aspect and the mobile aspect coming together is just, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, you see nowadays, I've seen so many people that are even in their 80s on mobile devices. It's just amazing, you know, talking to their grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
you know, using Skype. I mean, it's fantastic. When you think about, you know, years and years ago, you had to buy these super expensive phones to be able to communicate with people on the other side of the country if you wanted to see their face while you're talking to them. They were very expensive. The other person had to have the same phone, and it costs a lot of money. Nowadays, they just need a computer and internet connection. And most devices have a webcam, whether that's, you know, your iPhone or your Android device or your iPad or your desktop computer or your laptop. It's really easy, and it's really removed those barriers. It brings people together, and it goes back to this collaborative environment, you know, that we have here at Embarcadero also, is whether you are in Spain or you're in other offices around the world, or you're here, Skype and GoToMeeting, they really allow us all to collaborate.
Yep. So is there any technology you're excited about in the near future or the far future? Or
I'm really excited about what we're doing in the mobile space.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about the ability for users in the future to be able to build apps for both iOS and Android. I think that's really exciting. I'm also really excited about what we've done with FireMonkey UI and styling. I think it's extremely powerful. It's easy to use. The ability for users to take their one code base across all the devices, it's really exciting. And I'm just really looking forward to, you know, what else is to come. And there'll be a lot of great stuff coming.
Yeah. I think this is a huge opportunity for not only Delphi developers to be going mobile, but for other people that are looking for the good way to hit multiple platforms, especially mobile platforms.
Definitely.
And then, yeah.
I mean, that's really what it's all about. You know, nowadays, people spend a lot of time and effort building their iOS app with one tool and the Android app with another tool. And in the future, they'll be able to do that with one product.
Yep.
From Embarcadero. So that's really exciting.
It is exciting. I was actually invited to be on the tablet show a few weeks back, and it's done by the guys that do .NET Rocks, and mm-hmm. they're talking about mostly Windows tablets, but they were really excited about the fact that FireMonkey is going to let you do mobile development on iOS and Android with one code base. And they're like, well, this is amazing. Even after the call was over, they're like, people are going to be blown away by this. This is just such a neat idea.
And they're native apps.
I mean,
that's really their native applications. So that's really exciting. I think, you know, that's definitely one of the things I'm most excited about.
Yep. Very cool. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time, Serena.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the podcast at Delphi.org. I hope you've enjoyed it. Typically, I'm in the Scotts Valley office for about 1 week per month. So my plan is to interview some people behind the scenes of our favorite development tools and use those for some of the next few episodes. So for example, my next episode, I have planned an interview with John Thomas, or JT. He is the Senior Director of Product Management here in Embarcadero Technologies. So definitely want to tune in for that episode and future episodes of the podcast at Delphi.org. Special thanks to a good friend of mine, Phil Smith, who recorded our new theme music that we're using.